is Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
Welcome, everybody. It's Bob, Dave, and Moore here on 710 ESPN Seattle. No Jim Moore today. Taking a well-deserved day off. He's worked a number of days in a row. He needs to catch his breath, so he'll take today off.
Oh, yeah. I will miss Jim.
I'm trying to think of what he would say if one of us were out. What's his line? That's rich. Well, boy, he really earned that
it's,
day off.
It's interesting.
He?
Well, you'll probably hear it as I'm going to take a few days off.
Oh,
here,
that's right. Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting that, our Seahawk guy during, the season.
Yeah.
Is thinking it's okay to take off days here. So
that's stay tuned for those comments when Dave is off on Friday and then a few days next week. But Jim is out today, so Dave and I will carry the load here. We got a packed show today. Spencer Haywood, a Seattle Supersonic of long ago, has written a book, and he's going to join us at 3:30. So we will talk to him. For those who remember Spencer Haywood, maybe a lot of our listeners are too young, but a man who went to court to battle for the rights of NBA players. He's coming out of college early. We'll have him talk about that a bit. But he'll join us at 3:30. We got John Clayton at 4 o'clock. Yogi Roth, talk some Pac-12 football with him at 4:30. And then our buddy comedian Adam Ray will join us at 5 o'clock. You're already laughing. I just said his name. You're already laughing.
Jim and I always talk about we try not to laugh too much because it sounds like yuck, 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 the radio crazy guys in the morning that, everything's funny. And I can't help it with that guy. He kills me.
He's
my favorite comedian.
He's really talented. And he's going to be flying out of town. He's involved with a very big project. We'll let him explain, but.
Yeah, I'll have to ask him about that that documentary that's going on right now, The Comedy Store.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, were you aware of that, that place? I mean,
I've been there a number of times.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and there's like David Letterman started there.
Oh, all the greats.
Yeah.
Our buddy Craig Gass, who was on there, his name's up on the wall there.
He's, no kidding.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if you were, that's kind of where you started out. So, has Ray
Adam?
Played that?
Oh, he's there all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's one of those comedians where he can call up. The way it works is you fight to get any sort of stage time, and they've got multiple rooms there and smaller stages, and they'll put you on odd nights or whatever, the smaller stage with no audience. He's at that point where he can call and say, hey, I want to work some things out. Can you get me a spot? And they'll shoehorn him in on the main stage. I mean, so, yeah, he's got some juice around there.
Well, what were the ingredients of the Luke Longley essence?
Beef jerky and farts.
And farts.
People are going, I don't know what you're talking about right now. They're...
Well, we had him on a few. We were talking about
somebody's
The Last Dance and, the whole documentary with Jordan, and Luke Longley wasn't part of it. And then he was talking about his fandom and everything. And somehow Luke Longley,
I think he was talking about the Michael Jordan cologne that was out.
Right,
Michael
right.
Jordan had a cologne. He said, Jim, you probably like the Luke Longley brand. It was what it smelled like, beef jerky and farts.
so and this stuff just rolls out of his mouth. It's pretty, pretty amazing.
All right. So we'll talk to Adam at 5 o'clock. So stay tuned for that. Meanwhile, another team that we looked at is one of the they're on the schedule for the Seahawks, and they were one of the, I guess, scarier opponents, or one of the teams we looked at and said, man, it's going to be a rough go. And I still think it's true, despite what we watched from the Buffalo Bills last night, where they got trounced by the Titans, 42-16. Not a good showing, but I don't really look at that and go, oh, they were fool's gold. We all got sucked into the Bills' hype. They're terrible. They're really not that good. They're a product of their schedule or whatever excuse we want to throw out there. Nobody's going undefeated. The Seahawks are going to lose a game this year. I'm certain of it. It's going to happen, and we'll all have to come together and deal with it when it happens. But I guess I don't put a ton into it or feel like, okay, we misjudged the Bills now. They're going to be an easier game for the Seahawks. I didn't come away from last night's game feeling that way.
No, and, also I felt like that's a really well-coached team in Tennessee. I mean, and how about Ryan Tannehill, man? I mean, remember when he was in Miami, and he appeared to be the wrong franchise quarterback. In Miami, stuck with him and thought, okay, this guy will eventually develop. And then, last night, 21 for 28, three touchdowns, zero interceptions. Meanwhile, Josh Allen threw two interceptions. So, yeah, that's the part that stood out to me. I think that, you know, I think they're really well coached. And, yeah, I don't think, look, it's going to be a tough game no matter what. But, you know, you look at, like, the Vikings. And, again, I'll have to go back and look, but I think it's like 16-2 their opponents are. 16-3, I think, now with 17-2 now with the Titans winning. I mean, those are the teams that they've lost to. So it's, you know, teams like that are deceiving, and, you know, they're better than I would think. The Vikings would start to go on a run here. So, yeah, you just can't tell sometimes, you know, based on what their record looks like. But it's going to be tough no matter what when you go into Buffalo.
Yeah. We get into some of the power rankings that came out centered around the Seahawks. We'll get to that in a moment. But Peter Schrager from Good Morning Football talked about Seattle's defense, and, yeah, obviously there are issues with it, but he talks about how they perform in the clutch.
Seattle's defense has given up a lot of yards and a lot of points this season, but whether it be the Dallas game, the New England game, or this game, when they need to make a stop, the Seahawks defense has made the stop. So this morning, as much as we talk Russell and DK, Seahawks D, they bend, but they do not break. I am so impressed with how they performed at the end of that game last night.
So there's a positive spin on what we've been watching, where we're looking at a defense where you feel like, yeah, they've gotten away with it, but it could come back to bite you at some point. He's talking about, you know, was it the Miami game where he held them to a bunch of field goals? I'm trying to remember the game where they were driving down the field, kept driving, but ultimately resulted in field goals.
I think it was five field goals in that game.
Yeah, yeah. So he's right. They are a classic bend, but don't break. And that led to our conversation about, well, is that sustainable? You're getting away with it now, but at some point is somebody going to trounce you? Is somebody going to beat you in a crucial situation? Maybe. But I think what we're learning with the Bills game and watching the Seahawks and everybody else, first of all, there's not a perfect team out there. Every team has their flaws, and we'll go through these power rankings, and it points out the weakness for each team. But Seahawks, they have as the number one team, ESPN power rankings. They've got them at number one. It says biggest weakness, the defense. And then it gives a little blurb, and then Green Bay Packers, who, in my opinion, are probably the most complete team right now. I understand we're 5 weeks in. And they just came off a bye, so they're 4-0. Their biggest weakness, according to this, injuries.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think, as much as I've been hand-wringing over the defense, I don't feel like there's a gap between the Seahawks and anybody else at the same time. I think, Packers probably a little bit more complete, but in terms of a gap between the Seahawks and them, the Seahawks and the Chiefs, the Seahawks and anybody else you think is a top-tier team, I don't think there is much of a gap.
Well, I think it's interesting to listen to Peter Schrager, who's on the NFL Good Get Up Good Morning show or whatever with Nate Burleson. Get Up Good Morning.
Yeah, I think you got all the words. Good Morning
Hello,
Football.
Good Morning Football. Okay. no, but, I mean, he's talking about the defense is really not being a problem is what he's describing. And I just wonder how much of it is here. We keep talking about how this is a historically good defense 6-7 years ago.
Yeah.
And now that's not there. It's gone. Like, and you can understand that. Like, if you're close to this team, you're like, what in the world happened? You know, because you have a lot of the you've got KJ, you've got Bobby, you've got, Jaron Reed from a few years ago. And then you got what are maybe you're hoping is one of the best safety tandems. I think Anthony Harris and Harrison Smith, probably the best in Minnesota. But still, I mean, you've got some pretty good pieces. And so if you're Peter Schrager and you're, you know, doing that show and you're back in New York or wherever he is, you're going, well, they make plays. And they do. I mean, you're going to see at the end of the game an interception against Dallas. You're going to see a goal line stand and against New England, and you're seeing this. And that's really what they're built on. Last year, it wasn't so much that as much as it was just takeaways. It wasn't them coming up with these big key stops on fourth down and everything. But, you know, this year, that's what it's been about. So that's what's making people nervous. Like, is that sustainable? Just like, is the offense putting up these ridiculous numbers, video game numbers? Is that sustainable? And then you worry about the defense because you just look at the yards and what's going on between the goal lines. It's, man. But, you know, they've had turnovers. They're number two in turnovers. Mm-hmm. They had the safety against Dallas.
Yeah.
So, I mean, at times they can do that. It's just, it's hard to explain. You know,
I'd like to see them give themselves a break, though. Like we talked about it yesterday, almost a 20-minute disparity in time of possession in that mm-hmm. last game. Defense was on the field forever.
Yeah.
And it's not like, hey, the offense is going three and out. And yeah, the first half they were. But typically this offense is providing points and they're sustaining drives. Defense has got to help themselves. I'm just thinking about their betterment, their health, the wear and tear on their body. Get yourself off the field. You know, so as much as they are making those plays, I'd just like to see them make their life a little easier.
Yeah, so do it earlier in the series.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Well, you know,
now, are you surprised they're number one, though, in the power rankings for ESPN?
Well, I guess a little bit. But, you know, I was looking at NFL Network. They have them sixth.
Okay.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, it just depends on what you're going with there. So I'll just read NFL has Green Bay as number one. That's the team I like. I think,
I'm with you. They're number two in this one.
You know who else I'm worried about is the Rams. And we looked at it into them yesterday. Yep. Top four or five defense, you know, as far as yards and points.
And their offense is a top tier offense as well.
Yep. And against the pass. But and then they have the Chiefs ranked second, Baltimore Ravens third, and then it goes, you know, Steelers, Titans, and then Seahawks. So yeah, I mean I think that definitely I just like Peter Schrager's take on that, but you know, I was on with Clayton today, and, you know, he was asking about the third down numbers and, you know, what that means. And I'm like, you know, to me, just as a player, I mean, you look at the Seahawks on offense, they went 0 for 7. And then on defense, they allowed 6 for 14, 43%. That's okay. But, I mean, they've allowed, you know, they can't get off the field. And it's also, you know, I always say when you talk about third down, it's not like it's some special play. Like, you're not, you know... You don't get your legs tied together on third down, and you're not supposed to perform something that's outside of it's a football play, you know. And we talked to Sherman about this a long time ago, and he's like, "Well, I mean, what about first down and what about second down? If there was a huge problem, we'd have problems on those downs. But just because it's third down, you know, I don't know if that necessarily says anything. I think I called it a fun fact. How about that? Third down percentage is a fun fact?
Yeah.
Probably not. But
I guess Pete would disagree with that.
Yeah, but I would just say, you know, like, what are you doing differently? Maybe you during the bye week, you go, okay, maybe we're not taking chances on third downs. Or maybe we're taking too many chances on third down, and we're trying to force something to happen. Let's just let our guys drop back into a normal zone, react, you know, play good football, read your keys, all of those things. And maybe that's, you know, something that, bless you, that, you know, does, yeah, they figure something out during the bye week. And it'll give them a chance to do that. But, yeah, I've always been like, well, I mean, I'm kind of with Sherman. Like, is there a problem on first down, second down? There is. So there's a problem on third down, too, because they're leaking lots of yardage. And every time I look, I'm like, wow, 450 yards the Vikings got. And I want to say that the Indianapolis Colts a few games earlier for the Minnesota held them under 200.
Yeah, you know? What was more disappointing about that to me was what they did with the ground game, because – we talked about how stout they had been against the run. Now, again, it was a handful of games, so hard to say this is who they are against the run and this was an off night. I think they're probably the truth is somewhere in between what they were going into the game and what they gave up in that game. This text, and you guys can text in throughout the show, 710-710 to the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line. 253 says, the Seahawks defense is as good as it needs to be according to the situation. Their coach puts them in prevent positions when we are up, and they put them in more aggressive positions when we are not. I don't see them changing their defense. I don't see them going into a prevent defense. I don't see them playing off further from the receivers when they've been up. I don't know. Am I wrong on that? Have they altered the way they play defense with the lead versus when they're when it's closer?
Well, I don't think it's some huge, you know, overhaul difference. But I mean, look, you don't need to be aggressive. You know, here's what, again, they're second in the NFL in takeaways, right? Mm-hmm. So you're kind of playing the game that, hey, if they're going to go on a 12-play drive, now this didn't happen against Minnesota except for a couple of times. You know, they got two turnovers and 21 points in what, like 3 minutes or something like that?
Yeah.
So, you know, but yeah, you keep everything in front of you and hope nobody's going to take a chance and jump something. So all of a sudden it's a 2-play drive, ball's sailing over your head because you jumped, you know, a double move, and then all of a sudden, you know, they're right back in it. So they're laying off a little bit and just relying on the fact that, hey, we've got playmakers on this defense and we're going to, you know, we're going to just let them take, you know, takes not chances, but, you know, see if they can pull the ball out. On one of those third down runs, I don't know if you remember at the end of the game, KJ didn't, instead of making a tackle, he tried to pull the ball out.
Mm-hmm.
Those are probably going to come because they're very opportunistic. They're good at it. So that's kind of how they're playing it. Maybe not a drastic change, but yeah, when they're ahead, that last drive maybe doesn't happen often, but that last drive that the Dolphins had, mm-hmm. that to me looked like they were laying off, just kind of playing prevent defense, maybe a little bit too strong of a term. But, you know, here's, I mentioned the bye week. You've got Snacks Harrison. That guy might make a huge difference in the middle of your line. You know, if he's in good shape, we'll see. And that's the thing. And then, you know, they talked about Kendricks a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, brought him in for a workout.
Yeah, so, I mean, that might be. And I said this, and there's been, you know, some talk about Cody Barton and everything. And, you know, I said at the time, I think Kendricks is a better linebacker than Cody Barton. I think Cody Barton can be that kind of guy. But if you look at it right now, based on how he played last year, and you pointed out, Bob, he's very good about, he'll just, you plug him in, he doesn't need like 2-3 weeks to get up to speed. And I think he can just go out there and play. So that's still a possibility. So maybe they make a couple of personnel moves to try to bolster their defense a little bit and figure some things out. So.
One more. The people are texting in about Jamal Adams and, you know, won't he make a difference or should they use him this way? Should And when he got hurt, we saw some texts and you know, a couple people on Twitter say, you know, they need to use him in a more traditional way. He's leaving our secondary exposed when he's up on the line. But then we've seen the secondary without him there. We saw the secondary with him there. You're getting the same result. When he comes back, I feel like they should use him exactly as they were, based on their opponent. Be as aggressive as they were. Allow him to potentially make that game-changing play, whether it's a sack, whether it's a tackle for a loss in the backfield, whether he strips somebody, comes up with a turnover. To me, there's no difference between if you want to play him as a traditional safety and leave him back there and not be as aggressive with him. I don't think the defense gets better that way. I think you take advantage of his unique set of skills.
Yeah. Well, and you think about what Minnesota did. Their two best players are their safeties. Mm-hmm. And in the first half, they put them in deep halves, you know, so they kind of, you know, took them out of that game, you might say. But it sure worked in the first half anyway. But I think it was Schottenheimer that said this, and I thought it was really well said. It's like every game is like a different entity. So, you know, you're not going to entirely change what you do, but if you see some opportunities when they're looking at Arizona, you know, how do you want to use, and I could see them using Jamal Adams as like a spy because Kyler Murray, he can run. And, you know, if you put him up there in the box and then you're sending him on blitzes, you might take him out of a play, you know, so if Kyler Murray is going to scramble to his right and end up, you know, running 40 yards down the field to the right side and you're bringing off, you know, bringing Jamal Adams off the left side, he might not get there. So it'll be interesting to see how they use him against that. But I think just like Schottenheimer said, every game is its own entity. You go, okay, what do we do well and what do they do well and how do we match up against them? And however that is, but I think Jamal Adams coming off the edge, I mean, you saw in the Atlanta game, and maybe that was because it was kind of a surprise. Nobody really knew how to plan for it, but I also saw Ryan Neal doing that a couple of times, and you kind of saw the difference between Ryan Neal and Jamal Adams, and that's just because, not because Ryan Neal's not good, it's because Jamal Adams is very special, and you saw him kind of spin off a couple of tackles there, and that's, you know, that's something that Jamal Adams brings the guy down, so... Yeah, however that is, but I would say you'd have to be a little bit more careful this next week with Kyler Murray that you kind of leave Jamal Adams in a position where he can match up with him. And if he takes off running, you're able to have a guy that's just as athletic, almost as athletic as Kyler Murray.
Is there one name before we get to take two? Is there one name who's set to return, do you think, outside of Adams? Obviously, Adams has a big impact, so we'll remove him from this question. But who do you think makes the biggest impact? I mean, potentially Daryl Taylor is an unknown. I don't have any expectations of him. I don't think it's fair. He's a rookie who's missed all this time. But Rasheem Green, Philip Dorsett, Josh Gordon, Rashad Penny, Jordan Brooks. Is there one name out of that group you look forward to more? Snacks Harrison.
Yeah.
Is there one you look forward to more than the others and saying, you know what, I think this guy potentially has a massive impact?
Yeah, you know what? To me, it's actually Josh Gordon. I feel like that guy is really special. I mean, we'll see what's going to happen, but his speed and just running simple out routes that he got open on in both fourth quarter and overtime against San Francisco last year on Monday night. To me, that guy is special. The catch he made in Carolina, I don't want to make a big deal out of it because it's one play, but still, you know, and I see 206 agrees. I think it's Josh Gordon. I think that's the guy that can probably, you know, and you don't really need it there. I mean, you've got pretty good receiver tandem there, and you got a couple of good. I think Will Disley's going to get going now. I think he's going to start to have the kind of year that he has. He has been kind of quiet, but you probably don't need him. But, yeah, I think Josh Gordon is the guy that's, like, the most special in that group.
All right, let's take two.
It's time to take two. Brought to you by Infinity of Tacoma at 5.
Take two.
Much to Bob's joy, the Astros are down 3-0 in the series with the Rays after a 5-2 loss last night.
Let's go, Tampa. It's glorious. It's beautiful. Altuve with another error yesterday. He's got the yips. Way to speak it into existence, Dusty. I like Dusty. That's the only area I'm conflicted with in rooting against the Astros as hard as I am, is I love Dusty Baker. I think he's a great manager. I think he's a great guy. I'd like to see him succeed, but there are too many other faces on that bench that I don't like right now. So I am enjoying this. They'll play at 5:40 tonight will be the next game. Right now you got the Dodgers up 2-0 on the Braves. But, yeah, that's just delightful to watch them struggle.
I like this, too. Runners in scoring position, Altuve 0-for-1, Correa 1-for-2, Bregman 0-for-1. They went 1-for-8, runners in scoring position. So it is. It's a shame.
That's terrible.
I can't believe that, you know, Altuve goes out and makes it. It has to be in his head. I mean, guy, it's like the most I love watching him play defense. I love him at the plate.
Yeah, because we've seen it with great players in this league. We saw it with, you know, Steve Sachs is notorious for a guy all of a sudden who couldn't throw the ball. Joey Cora, who played for your Seattle Mariners, had that problem. Chuck Knobloch, who was a Gold Glover, all of a sudden becomes an outfielder because he can't throw the ball from the infield to first base. So I don't know if Altuve's problems will linger, but, yeah, it's not a unique situation getting the yips, and all of a sudden they're clutching up trying to – it's like a pitcher when they get the ball, when they feel the ball, and you see him try to – they almost shot put it to first base. I mean, these guys can throw 98 miles an hour, 60 feet, 6 inches, but you get them to lob it to first base, all of a sudden they don't know where the ball's going.
Yeah.
NFL Network's Mike Garofalo reports that the NFL has announced this season's Pro Bowl will be replaced by a, quote, variety of engaging activities. Players will still be selected to the Pro Bowl in the usual format.
A variety of engaging activities.
That doesn't sound like
water balloon fights.
Like the opposite of football.
Is that going to be a virtual thing? Everybody's on Zoom playing video games against each other. What does that mean?
I don't know. I have to say though, the game has gotten to be kind of a joke. Well, not
the Pro Bowl.
It's a joke.
It has been.
Nobody wants to get hurt, of course. And I remember J.J. Watt had to have surgery on his finger because remember they put him out there to catch a pass, and I think a ball that Peyton Manning threw went off his finger. But, you know, you don't usually see guys get injured, and the game reflects that. It's just terrible. It's not football. So I actually like the engaging activities, Bob.
I just want to know what they are.
Yeah. Well, you saw they do the one you know, receiver challenge where you have to go and throw it and they time it.
That stuff's awesome.
You know what the other thing that I love is the quarterback challenge with those targets.
Moving targets and the chalk on the ball and all that. Yeah.
If somebody said, like, you could have any wish you want, you know, with, you know, in the NFL, like, what would you like to do? I would love, they'd have to move it up, like, maybe 20 yards for me.
Yeah.
But wouldn't you love to sit there and see if you could hit those targets with a football? And Russ is just amazing with that. I think he wins it almost every year. So I kind of like those things.
Yeah.
But, I mean, yeah, and enough with the...
the game stinks.
Yeah, don't try to tell me. Chuck used to say this. I can't say it on the air, but it was basically a saying Chuck Knox had that was, don't urinate in my face and tell me it's raining. maybe that's even more gross. But to me, like, don't try to tell me that's a football game. It's not a football game. It's patty cake, and then they chuck it, and they try to, you know.
It's awful. Nobody will miss it.
Help each other. I'll ease you to the ground on this tackle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nobody's going to miss it, and I'd much rather a skills competition every single year. All right, coming up, NBA legend and former Seattle Supersonic Spencer Haywood is going to join us next to discuss his new book, The Spencer Haywood Rule. That's coming up next with Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
Coming up at the top of the hour, we'll talk some football with the professor, John Clayton. But right now, we get a chance to speak to a legend, an absolute legend. And for some of you out there who are old enough, you may remember him as a Seattle Supersonic. We're talking about the great Spencer Haywood is joining us now. Spencer, how are you, sir?
I'm doing fine, Bob and Dave. How y'all doing?
We're doing great. It's a pleasure to speak with you. We really appreciate you taking some time with us. You got a new book out, The Spencer Haywood Rule, Battles, Basketball, and the Making of an American Iconoclast. Tell me, I know you've been involved with books before, but what prompted this? Is this something you were really wanting to get done, or did somebody say have to twist your arm to some level and say, Spencer, you got to write this book? How did this come about?
Well, I'll tell you how it actually got started. Former Commissioner David Stern and Charlie Rosenzweig, who works with the NBA, we were just hanging out and spending time together. And they said, well, you know, this ruling, the one and done, the early entry, all of these different names they give it, you should look at doing something called the Spencer Haywood Rule in a book form. And so they got me some contacts and we started at Mark Spears from ESPN Undefeated and from our own former Seattle Times writer, Gary Washburn, who's now with the Boston Globe. The two of them got together with me and we started pounding out a book and we pounded out a masterpiece. I must say it was great. It's surprising me as well. But what it entails my life in Mississippi, growing up in the abject poverty. And then it moves to Detroit, where I found myself in a big city where we were, you know, life was really good. And then from there, on to Mexico City for the 1968 Olympics. And then back to the University of Detroit and on into Denver with the Denver Rockets. And when I hit to Seattle again, that's when the case started. I met this wonderful human being who owned the Seattle Supersonics at the time, Sam Schulman. Sam Schulman said, look, I know you're an underclassman, which meant, let me just mention this for the young folks out there, because they think that, you know, it used to be that you had to wait for 4 years after your class had graduated from high school before you could enter into the NBA. I know it sounds absurd, but that case we filed in the lower courts in California because we thought we would have a good chance with the case in California. So we went from there to the district court on into the Supreme Court where I won the case. And yet, the NBA never did give it the name that it has. It's A. Haywood versus the NBA, which I don't really like because I don't like the adversary attitude about it. Mm-hmm. But I like the idea of the Spencer Haywood rule. And so all of the young players nowadays are calling me the OG with the Spencer Haywood rule. So LeBron and one of the guys who started the whole process, we did it. We started that in Seattle with Kevin Durant.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
When he was there, when they had my jersey retirement back, I think in 07 or something like that. And so that's how this book started. So we can talk about anything in the book. I talk about my marriage with Iman, the famous fashion model, my children, my current wife that I've been with for 30 years, my recovery, because I did have a fall, y'all.
Yeah.
Well, not funny, but it is funny, you know.
Well, the fact you can laugh about it, I mean, it's an amazing life, Spencer, and you go through all this. I have to be fanboy, though, real quick here. Did you really average 32 points and 22 rebounds at Detroit? We read that. We're like, holy smokes. That is phenomenal.
And remember, it's not Division One, and it wasn't what they planned today. Detroit Mercer, we played Notre Dame, Marquette.
Right.
We played all of the independent schools at that time. Bob Lanier, St. Bonaventure, Howard Porter up at Villanova. I mean, it was some good ball. But let me just say for the fans out there and for the people who are listening, that year, the All-American team was Pete Maravich, who averaged 44 points a game. The second guy was Rick Mount, who averaged, I think, 39. And then I was like third or something with 32 or 33.
32.
And Calvin Murphy was right behind me. And then Kareem was right behind him. So, whoa.
Wow. What a year. You'd think 32 points would get you first. But let me ask you this, Spencer. Do the younger guys, and it sounds like they do, but do the younger guys appreciate what you did? And especially, you know, going to – you know, the Olympics in 1968 with Tommy Smith and John Carlos, and then, you know, you going to court and everything and how that has shaped everything today. Do you get every once in a while guys that don't really understand where that come from, or are they pretty well informed, would you say, these days?
Well, I think 90% of them before this book, and we're only talking about 2 weeks now, basically, 90% of them did not understand.
Mm-hmm.
They really didn't, and they don't understand. So this is an awakening. You know, we have the Black Lives Movement. We have the Black History Movement. And so now it's coming. NBA Commissioner, now Commissioner Adam Silver, has made it a point to make sure that they are educated on this idea of who I am, along with Michelle Roberts of the Players Association. And I got a strong advocate in Chris Paul, LeBron James, Kevin Durant, Russell Westbrook, James Harden, a couple of Sonics there, you know. Mm-hmm. Anyway.
<Yeah. laughs>
Hey. So I have some advocates out there that are starting to, like, let's get this thing done. Let's call it what it is. Instead of calling it all of these strange names, let's call it the Spencer Haywood Rule. So.
Hey, Spencer, before we let you go, and again, we're speaking with the great Spencer Haywood. He's got a new book out called The Spencer Haywood Rule, Battles, Basketball, and the Making of an American Iconoclast. You mentioned that you had a fall, and that's not a unique story. A lot of people have, but that's also a very personal thing for a lot of people. A lot of people aren't that willing to be public about struggles with substances. Is that something that were you reluctant to put this into the book? Is it something you were eager to share? How did you feel about some of the more personal things that are in this book?
I was very eager to share it because of the fact that, and this part kind of hurts a bit because four of my siblings have passed from alcoholism. It is a disease that's in my family. And when I got to LA, I came out averaging like 24 points and 12 rebounds a game. By the end of the year, I was down to 7 points and 5 rebounds. And just a shell of myself as a player. And, I mean, my drug of choice was cocaine from a smoking standpoint. And I just watched my whole everything just disappear. And so I don't want it to happen to anyone else, but I can't keep it. I can't keep my sobriety if I don't give it away, which means that if I don't tell anyone about it or don't share in my meetings with my psychiatrist, I'm just in a different place, and I can't hoard that. So I embrace it. I want to tell people about mental health because I had PTSD. I didn't know what that was. I thought it was like some kind of venereal disease. What are you talking about? You know? I don't know. I'm from Silver City, Mississippi, and I was raised there. I was raised up in Seattle, you know? I came there at age 20, so I don't know. I'm like, hey, you know, my Seattle people took care of me, but once I got out of the grips of Seattle, you know, I'm open game.
Mm. Well, it's fascinating stuff, and again, we're speaking with the legend that is Spencer Haywood. The new book, The Spencer Haywood Rule, Battles, Basketball, and the Making of an American Iconoclast, available wherever books are sold. Spencer, an absolute honor to speak with you. We really appreciate you taking the time with us, and we wish you the best with this book, and hopefully we get a chance to talk again down the road.
Thank you so much, and go Hawks.
Hey, there you go, Spencer. Nice. Thanks, appreciate it.
Thanks, Spencer. There he is, the great Spencer Haywood. Man, what a story. That's got to be a fascinating read with everything he went through. And wow. That was a heck of a line there. PTSD. I thought it was a venereal disease.
What is Spencer, 71 now,
I think 70, yeah, 71.
Where he started off in Mississippi. I mean, what a life.
Yeah.
I mean, ups and downs, sure, but holy smokes, this is going to be a really interesting book. Got to get out there and get this one.
Yeah. All right. Coming up, Seahawks linebacker Cody Barton is drawing some criticism for his play from a few people out there, and Jordan Brooks' absence. Dave Wyman disagrees. He'll tell us what he sees from Barton so far. That is coming up next with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and Moore.
Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
A reminder, you've got a radio in your home. If you've got a smart speaker, just tell it to play 710 ESPN Seattle or 710 AM. Turns into a radio right there for you. Coming up at the top of the hour, we'll talk some football with the professor, John Clayton. Before we get to Cody Barton and the mixed feelings about him so far, just an update in the NLCS. Dodgers are up 11-0 on the Braves in the bottom of the first inning.
How many pitchers?
Two pitchers for the Braves, and I love these ERAs right now. Wright started the game. He goes 2/3 of an inning and gives up 7 runs, and his ERA is at 94.50.
Is that bad?
That'd be bad. Yeah, and then the guy that Dayton comes in to relieve him, he goes a third. His ERA, right, he gives up four earned runs. ERA, 108.00.
Ooh.
That's not going to keep
up. So if you're at 99, you're like, yeah.
Yeah, you're feeling much of that's an improvement. That's
much
an improvement.
Better.
So, yeah, 11-0 in the first inning. So we'll keep you up to speed on how that one develops. But meanwhile, Cody Barton is a guy that's drawn a lot of criticism, some praise. You know, we saw some people texting. There was a small group. I'm not going to say it was by any stretch a majority. A very small group of people texting in Monday after the game, demanding answers of you. Because you've been a Barton supporter. You like a lot of the things he does. And there are some people feeling like, well, he didn't play well. He's not very good. He's slow. Whatever their opinion is. But there are a few people out there that seem to have a negative opinion of what they've seen to this point. And you went through and watched each of his plays in this game.
Yeah, and I went through and graded him, and yeah, there's some stuff to not like, and it's interesting because there's a lot of talk about he's overmatched, he's not fast enough. I went and looked at his combine numbers, 4.64 40, so, and then his bench was 30 reps, which is really good, 225, so good shape, everything. Look, I watched him in practice every day as a rookie. And a little bit this year as well. And I thought he had maybe one of the best camps since Lofotutupu as far as his pass coverage and everything. And last year I did a breakdown on a football 101 in early December, okay, and saw it, something like that come out later. But, you know, I went through how in the Carolina game, he had a chance to have two interceptions, and one was because Bobby knocked the ball down in mm-hmm. front of him, and he did a great job. It was just a good read. And I know everybody's going to say, well, what about this year? Okay, well, we're getting to it. But then as a rookie, he also – just the crowding thing I've been talking about, how now you're supposed to crowd number three, and then all of a sudden number two becomes number three, and number three becomes number two, and just making that adjustment. And he did – and it was going to be an interception, but the quarterback threw it offline. So, yeah, I mean, there's some things that he struggled with, and he struggled this year. Now, I, the thing that really made me mad was that tackle he missed on Matt Breida, which is in the article that you sent. It's the one where he spins around. That looks a lot like, okay, is Matt Breida Chris Carson level? Probably not. No. But is Cody Barton Harrison Smith level?
No.
Okay, so that's exactly what happened to Harrison Smith. I mean, it happens. Harrison Smith, it wasn't the same because Carson was going up the middle, but his touchdown run the other night, that was Harrison Smith that spun out of that tackle. And I'm sure everybody in, you know, up in Minnesota is going, geez, you know, you're a Pro Bowler, you're a five-time Pro Bowler. So that happens. So, but I was mad at Cody for that too. I'm like, come on, Cody, you got to make that play. And so, yeah, I went through and just was looking at his physicality is much needed, much needed. And so, you know, I went through, yeah, there's no way he was reading a guard at one point, so negative. But, you know, there's lots of kind of neutral plays. But, you know, I think I had 7 or 8 positive plays in the first half. And then, you know, there was probably 6 neutral and 1 really bad play. So, and then you go and look in the second half. And my Football 101 thing I did this week, we talked about, first of all, there was a non-play where he not. Oh, and let's get back also to the, remember the play on the Sunday night broadcast where Bobby Wagner and they drew it. He ran underneath the block. Right. Well, he got over the top. Cody did on his and made the tackle. It was downfield, but still he compensated for that. Another time on the no play down near the goal line at the very end of the game, Dunbar was supposed to be the outside contain guy for the run, and he gets hooked. So Cody goes and makes an adjustment, goes around him, goes up, blasts the fullback, knocks him down. The fullback's foot trips the running back.
Right.
And so had that not been a holding penalty on Benson Mayoa, that would have been a very important play. And then, you know, the fourth down play that he makes, he just smashes him. But he also sniffed out a couple of screens. And then he came out of coverage and just pounded Kirk Cousins. So, and it was just, you know, soften him up a little bit. It wasn't a sack, but it was like a scramble that he had. So, I mean, I just like his physicality. But I said this a couple of weeks ago, Michael Kendricks, if he's going to come in here and play like he did last year, he's better than Cody Barton.
Yeah.
I'm not saying Cody Barton is, you know, a world beater, but I like the things that he brings to this defense right now. And I think
it's a liability.
It's important. No, I don't think so either. And everybody's saying, well, look, he looks a little clunky and everything. Well, you're playing next to Bobby and KJ. Those guys are pretty smooth.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it looks a little bit herky-jerky every once in a while. I don't know what it is, though. Text it in. What is it about him that you don't like? I mean, I played linebacker, and so I'm going through and looking. I don't know exactly what the rules are, but I can pretty much tell. And there's not a lot of times where he's not doing, you know, running under blocks, or he's certainly not getting overwhelmed physically. But, you know, there was a couple of where he jumped something and missed a tackle. I mean, there's a 2 plays that are glaring in that Miami game. And then, you know, the one play that I, you know, I saw, I put 3 negatives down because I'm like, there's no way.
Is that the one the guy spun out of the tackle?
No, that was in Miami. I'm talking about the other night.
Oh, this last game. Okay.
Yeah. So where I was like, yeah, you got to read your guard. You're not reading your keys. But other than that, no, I don't think he's been a problem at all. And I don't know if there another linebacker here that could have taken on that CJ Ham guy and stoned him the way that he did. I'm not sure.
Yeah, it seems like it's sort of a vocal minority that feel this way, and we saw it on the, and you guys can text it. I'm not saying you're wrong, it's your opinion. 710-710, the busy hard seltzer text line.
Well,
Dave's saying you're wrong. But I sent you that article. Somebody actually sent me on Twitter from Field Goals, and the headline reads, "The Incomplete Athleticism of Cody Barton and Trey Flowers." And they show that play where he spun out of the tackle in Miami, and, you know, a couple bad plays from each, just talking about how they're just not great athletes. And I don't know. It seems like it's something that might be gaining a little momentum, just this belief that, yeah, he's not a good athlete. He's overmatched.
Yeah.
Yet when you go back and review the tape, it's not really a story you're being told.
Well, that's not what I'm seeing anyway. I mean, are these plays bad? Yeah, they're bad. I mean, look, you're gonna have those kinds of plays, but I've just been excited about his play. So, yeah, I mean, I think what happens is you see a couple of glaring tackles. But again, you know, the one where he spins out of Breida, that one made me mad. But again, it just, like, I was looking at that exact same play from Harrison Smith on Chris Carson.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, those kinds of things happen. And I just hope he gets better and better and he gets more opportunity to get on the field, because I like his pass dropping and I like the way he is physical at the line of scrimmage.
All right, coming up, the Professor John Clayton will join us. We'll talk all things football with him. If you've got questions for John, you can text those in right now to 710-710, the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line. That's coming up with Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.